Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. It is 5 minutes after 3:00 p.m., Monday, March 16, 2010. With me this afternoon is my co-chair, Senator Hoffman, Senator Ellis, Senator Thomas, and Senator Egan. This afternoon, we're going to continue our review of the Governor's Deferred Maintenance Bill, Senate Bill 253, and the FY 2011 Capital Budget, Senate Bill 230. We left off this morning with the Department of Transportation. Senator Olson has arrived, let the record show, along with Senator Thomas, if I haven't mentioned him. If we get through DOT this afternoon, we'll move on to the Department of Natural Resources next. It doesn't look, I don't think we'll make it. We'll try. We will need to conclude today's meeting about 4:15, as we have other issues going on at 4:30, so we're going to have a little shortened afternoon. Mr. Richards, Deputy Commissioner of DOT, is here. He left off on page 27, Project 48782, Foothills West Access Project, under the Roads to Resources. And if we can have Deputy Commissioner Richards come forward, and he can continue through the their list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Frank Richards, Commissioner for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Reference 48782, Roads to Resources allocation for Foothills West. This is essentially the road that we've been discussing of late, going towards Umiat and the Gubik gas plays. The $8 million will essentially cover additional development, aggressive development for a National Environmental Policy Act, environmental document, and permits necessary to construct an all-season road between the Dalton Highway and the State of Alaska Airport at Umiat. The NEPA process and the permitting efforts will not obligate us to build the road, but it will reduce the lead time required before construction can commence. State lands within the central north slope of the Brooks Range contain approximately 17 areas that show promise for natural gas. USGS estimates the range potential in the area of approximately 31 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, and the NPRA, which is located just off the, is a neighbor to Umiat, contains a potential additional 51 trillion cubic feet of gas. Specifically at Umiat, DNR's Division of Oil and Gas has refined resource estimates totaling approximately 590 million barrels of oil and 7 trillion cubic feet of gas within the road influence area. Currently, explorers in that area are having to build ice roads, and the exploration activities for those ice roads are costing the state through tax credits approximately $25 million a year. So the benefit to this road we see is an access to available resources, both oil and gas, for the future and the benefit of the state.
You just keep on rolling there, Mr. Richards.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Olson and Senator Huggins and Senator Huggins has arrived. Senator Olson with the first question, Senator Thomas with the second question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at this road and we see the access that's going out there, as far as the right-of-way goes, is there plans on having the EIS include the right-of-way for the natural gas pipeline to go through there as well, and not just a road?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the work effort that we are doing is looking at essentially a transportation corridor that would include both road and utilities, including pipelines, to go from the Dalton Highway towards Umiat.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't want to back up to the road to Nome situation, but I did want to make that at least Lance Mackey has found his way to Nome first again
right.
For the fourth time in as many years. But regarding the regarding this particular subject matter here, how long would you anticipate it would take to plan and build that road? Because that is a lengthy, a lot of money being put out in tax credits, based on what, you know, potentially the road even costs to build there. And of course, this is a pioneer type road. I would assume that we're talking about not necessarily up to the standards of what people are driving around in Anchorage or Fairbanks and other towns on. So it's a industrial type road, gravel surface kind of thing. So what's your thoughts on the amount, the cost, and the time frame?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, our current feasibility estimates for that are approximately $3 million a mile. So 75 miles to Gubik, or $225 million. The development efforts that we're undertaking right now are very similar to what Exxon is doing in heading towards Point Thompson, developing doing the pre-development work to get to an Army Corps permit, which is requiring an EIS to be able to permit that infrastructure development. So the timeline that we're looking at is probably 2 to 3 years to get through that environmental document and then coming back for construction dollars to be able to build the road.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Huggins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Frank, I'll go back as a departure point, the road to Nome. In this case, though, it's the road across the Big Sioux, because, as you know, we have Ormat's working on the geothermal site. We have the Chacachalma Dam site. We have Beluga, which I think is the largest power generation site. And then we have the Beluga coal gasification process proposed by SERI. And we already have the winter ice road that goes up to the Big Sioux. We have the Pioneer Road on the other side. My question is, where does that crossing site fit on DOT's priority list?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, we've had that request come into us and identified as a need for the future development. But right now, it is not in our plan or program in the foreseeable future.
Okay.
Follow-up, Senator?
Yep, a follow-up on, and this is in reflection to a meeting that we had in Anchorage in 2008, where you had all the communities come together on the gas pipeline, and there was an inventory of projects that supported the gas line activities. It's a website, as I recall. What's the status of that inventory, and how are you, what utility is it to you today?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, the status is that the communities and infrastructure owners came to us and identified what they envisioned the needs would be to develop that inventory to be ready for the large diameter natural gas pipeline. Have the ports in place, have the roads in place, if there's airports that would be needed to be updated. That list is still out there and is, again, part of the needs list that we maintain as a state. So going forward with that, when we develop our programs, primarily we're using our federal highway dollars to build out the state infrastructure on the highway side, highways and bridges. So we factor in those needs into that program, what commonly referred to as the STIP.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ellis, do you have a question? Okay. Go ahead and continue.
Mr. Chairman, that completes the roads to resources section. We now go into the statewide federal programs.
Mr. Chairman, the next project is $1.6 million, and it's project reference number 34752. This request is for commercial vehicle enforcement program. This federal funding will allow the program to provide the financial assistance and in preventing accidents and hazardous material transportation on our highways.
Does this include, seems like there's a new enforcement excitement the last year or so, 2 years in Cordova and other coastal communities dealing with trailers and hauling seine boats and seines around. Does that fall into this category, or is this just inspection of commercial vehicles?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is this would apply to commercial vehicles and not the situation you're discussing, and we could follow up, though, to clarify that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I might, I mean, the issue that was raised last summer with which were commercial vehicle inspectors that were asked to come to communities and did inspections on trailers hauling both boats and other vehicles. We have worked within the existing regulations because it was an issue of interstate versus intrastate commerce. And so we've come up with what we feel is a mechanism that will allow those uses to be essentially legal under our current state statutes.
Okay. Next item, please.
The next project, reference number 31375, this request is for $13.5 million. It's made up of $12 million in statutory designated receipts and $1.5 million in federal receipts. These are for services that are provided to other agencies and non-state agencies. This budget's for the funding coming back in through the department. If a department or program has some special drilling requirements and other work that DOT has the expertise for, then they will enter into that reimbursable service agreement for the work.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your rural dust control demonstration project, only if you might describe that project for us.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, could you repeat that, please?
On your rural dust control demonstration project, I wonder if you could delineate how much money that is going to involve and what's the project scope.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I unfortunately don't have the actual dollar costs in front of me, but we have been working with entities like the Denali Commission and some of the regional nonprofits in regards to coming up with dust palliatives for use in the villages on the roads, the airports, and four-wheeler paths to be able to cut down on the dust. So DOT has been providing some money, again, the Denali Commission working with those regional nonprofits and some of their IRR funds. If you would like, we could get back to you with the individual project specifics.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next project, reference number 31376, for $15 million in federal receipts, titled Federal Contingency Projects. This allocation allows a bit of discretionary funding for highways or airports for projects that may come in late in the year that we need to have the federal authority for to finish up the work within the season. The federal agency funds lapse September 30th, and our state books close on August 30th, or expenditures made by June 30th. So this allows the programs to continue to buy their materials and do the work that they need to do with the federal funding that's available from those grants that will be, or the formula funds that will be lost at the end of September. The next project, reference number 38424, $10 million federal request. This is titled Federal Emergency Projects, and these are for projects that are declared emergencies under the Federal Highway Administration program, and they would be used for repair and reconstruction of damages through natural disasters. Similar to a number of those floods and whatnot we had this last year, if it's not a state declaration, we still have a process to follow as to whether it will meet the federal emergency standards under federal highways, and then can cover some of the costs with federal and not 100% GF. Okay. You want to talk about this one?
State match.
Federal transit.
Reference number 30643, Federal Transit Administration grants. This is where the state receives funds, and we are able to then, through our own granting process, seek solicitations from transit agencies and be able to then provide capital grants out to them for mostly their vehicles, project administration, training, and some small operating expenditures.
The next project is reference number 6896, $8.6 million in GF match. This is federal aid match for the aviation improvements. The match dollars to the federal formula dollars received for the department are put in a separate appropriation so that we don't have individual pockets of that GF, but this matches our federal projects that you will see throughout if there's a match requirement. The next project.
Hold it, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just quickly, I was still reading the project on page 36, 38424. That money that is there needs to have a designation of a disaster by the governor. Is that in all cases, or and if it is, what happens to the money if there are no disasters and it's not used? Does it stay within the state, or?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, it does appear that I have misspoke earlier, but yes, it does take a disaster declaration before we can access these federal funds, similar to how we can access FEMA funds.
So it's not money we're automatically getting, you're saying, it's just federal receipt authority, I see, okay.
Yes. Right. Correct.
Thank you, sorry.
The next project is reference number 32609, $36 million in general fund match. Similar to the previous project we talked about, this is the federal aid highway state match, where match is required on our federal programs for surface transportation, et cetera. This is the match appropriation. If you want me to slow down, Mr. Chairman, let me know.
No, we're cooking along. I'll just watch the committee and I'll flag you. All you got to do is signal me and I'll slow it down.
Okay. The next project is reference number 33485 for $5.5 million in federal receipts. This project is for our highway safety grants program, federal receipts that come into the department to fund programs that will help in seatbelt laws, other highway safety training, networking, and advertising with the public to let them know what we can do for safe transportation and reduce accidents. The next project is number 41923. This is $1,210,000 general fund match. This small pot is for other federal program match. These would be our non-aviation or surface transportation federal programs. And again, the match is held into a different allocation than the actual federal dollars coming in. I'll take this one.
The next project is reference number 34018, statewide safety program. This is money that is provided to the state, provided back to the state because it's held back by the Department of Transportation as sanction money because we do not have in place specific laws regarding open containers and repeat offenders. So we are held back. We have a 3% penalty for the open container and a 3% penalty for actually repeat intoxicated drivers. That money is then comes back to us and can only be used for specific safety-related programs.
So on these whole litany of federal-funded projects, then, is safe to assume that you're going to come to LBNA with a list of projects you want to do, or how do we know what you're doing with the funds once you receive them?
Mr. Chairman, normally when the funds come to us, we're expending them doing specific safety-related projects. When you grant us this authority, we are then using those funds to be able to address such things as the Bureau of Highway Patrol that we've put in place on the safety corridors. It's putting in place reflective pavement markers, warning signs, and pedestrian countdown timers. It comes into the department and then is with our traffic safety engineers go through a scoring of projects that are they deem to be eligible. Next, Mr. Chairman, reference number 7470. This is an airport improvement program and appropriation with multiple sub-allocations. There is quite a listing of individual projects. Would you like us to go through those specifically?
Yeah, I think normally we walk through these, so
okay,
we can kind of skip through them or run through them fairly.
Reference number 47751, Bethel Airport Master Plan Update. This is a requirement for the Federal Aviation Administration to update our master plans.
Do we have please.
Next project is reference 49164, Cold Bay Airport Improvements. This is to address the runway safety area deficiencies at the Cold Bay Airport with a national target to have all of the runway safety area deficiencies addressed by 2015. Next project is reference number 40555, Cold Bay Airport Rescue and Firefighting Building. The existing structure, which houses our airport rescue firefighting vehicles, is too small. The new generation of vehicles that meet the requirements for this particular airport don't fit into the building, so we have to be able to have a suitable storage for them. Next project, reference number 43255, Shefornick Airport Relocation. This is the relocation of the existing community airstrip that's adjacent right to town with a, actually this is the funding of the second stage of this project that will cap it and complete it. Next project is reference number 43240, amended Dead Horse Airport Master Plan. Next project is reference number 41530, Fairbanks International Airport Environmental Assessment and Cleanup. Again, addressing environmental issues on vacant lease lots, mitigating and cleaning up those lots, and bringing it into compliance with clean air, clean water, and hazardous waste requirements. Next project is reference number 41527, Fairbanks Airport Equipment. This is essentially replacement of snow removal and probably firefighting equipment at the Fairbanks International Airport. Next project is reference 49633, Golovin Runway and Airport Improvements. This is essentially fixing the airstrip at Golovin, bringing it into compliance with Part 77 surfaces and making it a more usable runway with an improved equipment storage building. Next project, Mr. Chairman, is reference 49104, Haines Airport Drainage Improvements and Taxiway Runway and Airport Rehabilitation and Fencing. This is addresses many deficiencies at that airport, including repaving because of its low pavement condition index, taking care of the airport surface. The next project is reference 49163, Kodiak Airport Improvements. This again is addressing issues on the Kodiak Airport, specifically its runway surface and the safety area deficiencies. Again, trying to meet the FAA compliance deadline by 2015. The next project is reference number 49166, Caligonit Airport Reconstruction. Building out the existing 3,000 by 70 foot runway to current design standards.
Senator Egan.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Why do we need two snow removal equipment buildings in Caligonit?
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Senator Egan, I believe that the existing airport does already have a one bay equipment storage building. And so I believe that we'll be adding a second piece of equipment to bring that to. Yeah, rehab of the existing SREB. So we'll be adding essentially another bay. We'll have two pieces of equipment and we don't have enough room in the existing.
So it'll be the same building?
Probably be directly adjacent to it. Some of these buildings are not expandable.
Okay.
We, I think if we just take a pause here for a second, looks like we have several pages of this allocation on federal receipts. Does the committee want to walk through these one at a time or do a synopsis of the whole group or? Walk through them one at a time. Why don't we try to package them up? We might be here for several hours. So let's package them up on this allocation, dealing with federal funds, dealing with federal receipt authority.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, what you see here for specifically on the airport side is, again, master planning processes that we're putting in place that are requirements every 10 years that we've put in place a master plan to look at the development needs on those airports. We have several airports, Kodiak, Kotzebue, others that are building out to runway safety area standards. These are those areas directly adjacent to the runway that the FAA has determined we should build out to wider standards to provide a safer airport. Those dollars are very large dollar projects. Most of this money is coming to Alaska specifically to address these runway safety area needs. And then we also have projects where we're actually completing what was phase one and with a phase two to in western Alaska, where we've pushed up silt strips, silt embankments. We're now coming in with gravel to resurface those to make them into a final usable airport. That's it in general terms.
Okay, and we'll jump then to page five, I think is the next appropriation.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Before we leave that, can you go back and just tell me what Part 77 navigable airspace is?
Could you reference the page and the item?
It's page 54.1. It has to do actually with Golovin. The item is 49633. I'm not familiar with Part 77 navigable airspace.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, what Part 77 is essentially from the edge of the runway surface on both ends and on the sides of the runway. Consider an imaginary plane that comes up from the ground level. Off the ends, depending on the approach, it's either a 20-to-1 slope or a 50-to-1 slope. And off the sides, it's a 7-to-1 slope. So if you have trees or buildings that are penetrating that imaginary surface.
Oh, I see. Okay. Gotcha. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I'll now jump to page five. There's an appropriation surface transportation program. We have several pages of this, but it's a little more specific to around the area, so maybe we'll walk through these fairly fast.
Mr. Chairman, we spoke primarily on the rural airport system. There are a large number of Ted Stevens and International Airport projects. If there are any particular questions on those, right. we can get back to the committee.
Right. Any questions on page four? If we get clipping along, just put your hands up and we'll stop. But, there was a lot of allocations dealing with Ted Stevens International Airport.
Mr. Chairman, reference project number 32610, Surface Transportation Program. This is an appropriation with many sub-allocations. This is essentially our surface transportation program as outlined by our statewide transportation improvement plan, the STIP. Dollar amount is.
So if we could stop there and jump up to what's on page 104, Alaska Marine Highway System Fleet Condition Survey. Update, is that an annual? Because the item right above it's the refurbishing for 20 million. So is this an annual fleet survey, or how does the 250,000?
Mr. Chairman, this project is actually in the February amendments is a delete.
Was enough for me?
It's a deletion.
Okay. Do we have any other questions on the remaining of page five? Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I note number 49117, the AMATS arterial roadway dust control. Is that the program that was so controversial in my community last year with members of the public complaining about DOT's performance on the cleaning of the state roads?
Page 106.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Senator Ellis, specifically no. This is a federal project that is being used to apply to the sand and grit prior to the sweeping by the municipality and by the state. The challenges that we had last year were on the state routes where the contractor was not performing for the sand pickup on the state routes. What we are doing this year with that new EPA permit that I talked about this morning is we'll be required to sweep all of the state routes twice by June 1 and then twice more on the main arterials by first snowfall and once more on all of the secondary roads. So you'll see a significant improvement in terms of the street sweeping that we'll be having to do this year to comply with that EPA permit.
Okay, so Mr. Chairman, if I can just make sure I understand. So it's federal requirements associated with these funds that will prep the roadways for better service from DOT later in the year? Is that an accurate way to characterize it?
Through the chair, Senator, my understanding is that this is not just for state routes, though. This is for all the routes within the municipality. So it has a benefit to both the state assets as well as the city assets.
But for the civilians at home or my constituents, it's reasonable for them to expect better performance on the part of DOT this coming year than last year in terms of road sweeping.
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, yes, we have a contract that we have let. We have the contract bids in place, and we're just ready to finalize those contracts to let them loose so that they'll be performing the sweeping this spring.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on page 5? Jump to then page 6. Again, this is a continuation of the allocation. And do we have questions on any of the projects going down 6? And while the committee members look at that, I'd like to ask Deputy Commissioner, on page 116, there's a Kaufman Cove wander around town trail for $450. What's the wander around town trail for $450,000 when the whole island's a park? Well, some people would like to have it a park, I should say.
Mr. Chairman, the wander around town trail project is to do that, construct a paved pathway, a 10-foot wide paved pathway, to provide safer access to the boat harbor and the ferry terminal within the community.
Okay. If I could jump down to page 125. I'll pull that one back. I was going to ask a question on that, but I won't. Do we have any other questions on page 6 on any of the listed items? Senator Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There at the top of the page 6, the ride-sharing and transit marketing and the transit fleet expansion and replacement. I've had a lot of contact this year from folks in my community about transit and improvements there and federal monies passing through. So I guess I'm just highlighting that and expressing support for those upgrades.
Okay. That is page 109.
And 110.
Any other questions on page 6 from committee members I ask about? Okay, let's jump to page 7 is another page of solid allocations. See anything there for questions? Page 7. These are all, for those watching at home, these are all federal receipt authority issues here. We'll move on then to page...
Mr. Chairman, just a question there at the...
Senator Ellis.
Bottom of page seven, the last item, Matsu off-system bridges. What does off-system, what's an off-system bridge?
Page 144.
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, off-system bridges are essentially those bridges that are not on the state road system. They're on municipal roads, and so in this case, these particular bridges were built with rudimentary old railroad car flatbeds, and so those have deteriorated, and so this money will be allowed to improve those to good design standards and reconstruct those bridge efforts.
Thank you.
Any other questions on page seven? And let's go on then to page eight. Again, we have another page of federal allocations of that appropriation, so maybe you could, Deputy Commissioner, explain the first item on page 145. It's new Seward Highway, Rabbit Creek to 36th Avenue for $23
million. Mr. Chairman, reference 40358, New Seward Highway, Rabbit Creek to 36. This project is going to expand the Seward Highway to two lanes, by two lanes, from Rabbit Creek to 36 to help with the flow of traffic on the Seward Highway. This is part of the Connect Anchorage initiative that we've been working on for the last 7 to 8 years to help with the flow of traffic within Anchorage.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that project, for 7 or 8 years, I've been corresponding with DOT and the commissioner in particular, or various commissioners, and along with my House counterpart about sound barriers, protecting some of the neighborhoods I represent that would come be impacted by this this road improvement. And the response always from DOT was very professional and basically saying, please don't, you know, put money into the capital budget for sound barriers for these neighborhoods, which DOT agrees are highly impacted by the Seward Highway and by the noise. And I mean, it's pretty unbearable if you go, and I've been to those neighborhoods. And DOT has admitted that, but they've said, no, we really, it would be a waste of money to put money in the capital budget for those sound barriers until this project comes along and it's time to upgrade the Seward Highway. And at that time, we will take into account the impacts on these neighborhoods that are right up against the Seward Highway. And that would be the time for this project to include, not for a separate funding, but as part of this project, that as the Seward Highway is upgraded, that the impact on those neighborhoods be taken into account. So I guess I'm just repeating what I've said in many letters that may or may not have circulated to all of you folks over the years, that this is the project we've been waiting almost a decade for to achieve some sort of sound barrier or buffering for the neighborhoods. So I hope you'll practice contact-sensitive design and work with the neighborhood folks and do something reasonable. It's a big money project, and this is our chance to do right by some neighborhoods that have been very heavily impacted over the years by traffic.
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, I'm not familiar with the project enough to identify if we have included sound barriers. I hope we have. But if I may understand the question, then it's installation of sound barriers in neighborhoods which currently do not have, or rehabilitation of the sound barriers which are currently in place. Is that the question?
Yes, there are no sound barriers in place now. And DOT always promised that when this project came along, that would be the time to discuss sound barriers, and that was part of the DOT recognized the problem, and it would get worse with an expansion of the roadway. There'd be lots of money involved, and that would be the time to bring up sound barriers. So that this was my chance.
We'll look into the project and get back to you if the sound barriers are there.
The impression I've had is that the planners at DOT knew that this would, with the expansion of the Seward Highway, that sound barriers or buffering would have to be part of this project, or people will, it just would be untenable. The roadway will be in people's living rooms. Not literally, but almost.
I understand.
Thank you.
Any other questions on page 8 of projects? Senator Egan.
Just a curiosity, on page 145, that seems like an awful lot of work for $23 million.
Through the chair, Senator Egan.
Because the completion of the Sunny Point here in Juneau, that seems like an awful lot of work for $23 million.
Through the chair, Senator Egan. Again, realizing this is from Rabbit Creek at the south end of the Seward Highway, right there, right above Potter, all the way through to 36. So it's a fairly significant length of road.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It seems like you're $23 million. And you're proposing a lot of construction for that $23 million figure.
Oh, I understand your question. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
The inverse. We've been, our experience of the last year has been a reversal of what we were seeing in 2007, 2008, where the cost of construction was going up at double digits inflation. The bids that we received this last year and into this year have been very favorable. We see it's a highly competitive construction market. Folks are coming in with very bids much lower than our engineers' estimates. So we feel comfortable that this number is going to be able to perform the work that we've identified.
Good luck. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead and continue. All right, any other questions on page 8? Page 8. Seeing none, we'll move on to page 9. Again, for those at home, we're still in these federal allocation on federal receipt authority. Any anything on page 9? We'll go on to page 10. And our allocation stops off through the fourth item. Surface transportation, page 190. Just took me a minute here to flip to it. You could help us on page 190.
Mr. Chairman, reference 36366, surface transportation pre-construction. These are the efforts that essentially pay for the engineering for the project. It allows us to do all those preliminary steps like reconnaissance, preliminary engineering, our design, our right-of-way acquisitions, utility relocations, all the necessary activities to prepare the documents and the plan sets, apply for the permits, and provide the engineering support for the federal program. Across the spectrum of what we just looked at, including highway and bridge projects.
I think if we want to influence the STIP process, I guess this is the time to approve a lot of the funding that are in the STIP. Is that correct? Let me rephrase it. Some of us feel that we don't have as much influence in the STIP process, the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program. Our plan that some of us would like. So is this not the time to impact that process on the funding side?
Mr. Chairman, if you are talking about individual project features, this is where the design criteria is developed and the designs are created to be able to bring the project through to the construction phase. The process of the STIP is, again, the federal process that we follow identifying a needs list, develop scoring criteria that we use to then score those projects on the community transportation program, and then be able to seek the funding for those projects that have high enough ranking to be able to proceed forward. The federal process is challenging. It is cumbersome, and I hear your frustration in terms of the legislative impact into the development of the projects. It's truly when we get the needs presented to us by legislators, by community members, and by department staff that it's the determination factor through that scoring criteria process that presents us with the projects that we then bring to the legislature for funding.
If we could hit on page 191-1 and 191-2 for those watching at home dealing with the Alaska Class New Ferry, there's some vessel federal receipt authorities for $2,100,000 and then $60 million. Can you help us with the $60 million?
For the record, Jim Beadle, Deputy Commissioner for Marine Operations. If I understand the question correctly, a couple of years ago, the legislature put $60 million into the Alaska Marine Highway Vessel Replacement Fund. Is what we need is the authority to spend that money now. Jeff Otteson, through his shop, submitted a STIP to the federal government, and they okayed a project for the other $60 million with the federal money that would complete the funding of this project. So. Does that answer that question?
Well, it leads into the point. Okay. The point is we've got the Parks Highway that needs a lot of work, and the Stewart Highway needs a lot of work. So I guess and we need jobs in the state. So can we take the federal receipt money that was targeted for the Marine Highway, redirect that to, in this example, needed highway improvements in the metropolitan areas, use general funds to purchase our Alaska class ferry and then build it in Alaska and put Alaskans to work. So not only do we fix our highways in the metropolitan areas, but we create jobs and employment in our own state. So I guess that's the question I have for DOT. If we could, you know, be a little creative in how we do these projects so we can build our own infrastructure in our state.
And to the chair, I'd like to go back to what Frank Richards was talking about earlier on the roads to resources, and basically this is a very similar thing. He wanted to use general fund money to start that project so you don't start going down the federal line. The Alaska Marine Highway started this project years ago using federal money. We have been asking the federal side if that federalized the project or not.
And I don't
know if you prefer Jeff Otteson to answer this, or if I misspeak, then Jeff can correct me. But we've been speaking with Dave Miller, and as what he tells me is it doesn't federalize it. Nationwide, until you actually go to construction, they believe that it is not federalized until you start the federal process. The problem is the Ninth Circuit Court has ruled otherwise. The Ninth Circuit Court says if you have a dollar worth of federal money in here, it's been federalized, and they've already ruled that that's what they believe. So you would have to get it beyond the Ninth Circuit Court because we started with federal money. Even though the federal government says that didn't federalize it, the Ninth Circuit Court says that did federalize it.
Okay, it's kind of a technical issue, but we actually think appropriated at this table $75 million, and the governor exercised that authority, veto authority, and moved it down to 60, or we'd have 75 sitting there to move forward with this project. It still comes back to the same point that, you know, we're trying to build our shoreside infrastructure and our ability to manufacture ships and maintain them, or actually maintain them and construct them, and we can't build a ferry for Washington State. they won't let us bid on. Their procurement structure requires them all to be built in state, is my understanding, in the state of Washington. I see no reason why Alaska shouldn't operate under the same guidelines rather than send our work to Washington State. And I'm not so sure if we shouldn't take a hard look, unless you guys already got legal opinions saying that we can't, and it's going to fall into the ruling from the Ninth Circuit. And we can't back up and correct that misguided appropriation into the initial funding of the design or planning of that Alaska class ferry.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I think it was last week or maybe the week before, Alaska Shipment Dry Dock was here doing a presentation on the Alaska class ferry, and they indicated that they were really close to having a plan ready that would prove that they could build this boat. They indicated that the process that we're going through, a CMGC process, which is a competitive bid, they're actually very excited about, and that they think that they can be competitive. I do know there's a lot of interest in shipyards. I think the timing is right for us to be building a boat and getting a fair price. Alaska Ship and Dry Dock testified that they like where we are and that it works for them. They've indicated that they can build it. They indicated that they're going to have a plan to do so, and they think they can be competitive on the bid process.
Right, and I've heard that, and I've had conversations with them. Just so the people at home don't misinterpret what we're talking about here, no one's interested in spreading the margins of Alaska Ship and Dry Dock. Well, you know, they have to be competitive, not only in price but in quality and delivery time of the vessels to do that. But clearly, the state of Washington bars us from building their ferries, and I see no reason why we can't set forth policies to create our own infrastructure in our state and our own employment, because we've got dropping populations on our coastal regions, and this is a classic example of an item that can help, you know, answer that and turn that around. And right now they're in the process of doing a ship for Matsu, which is a real complicated ship, and it looks really nice, and a lot of us have been down there and looked at it. And we have the financial ability, the state of Alaska, to redirect these federal monies to the Parks Highway or what have you, and have our ships built with our own ability to cash flow it, our own treasury, have our cake and eat it too in the state. So it's, I guess, something that I guess I need to have a discussion with the governor about, to see the administration, to see how locked in we are to this Ninth Circuit, because if we can't back up on this particular project. Now, under this interpretation, does that include if we were to build two or three or four of these Alaska classes, and include all of those, or?
And I honestly don't know. I can follow up for you if you'd like.
Yeah, maybe you could, and then what we could do is make a Kodiak class. Just scrap it and redo it. I mean, I'd hate to see the state in a position where we go on for the next 8 or 9 years and don't have the ability to build ships in our coastal waters, because they are in our shipyards, because they are coming under pressure in the Columbia Basin and in California and in Puget Sound, as far as environmental issues and other things. So we have the opportunity, I think, to move this forward. I just hate to see us close that door because of some work that's already been done on that Alaska class, even if by chance we don't have the ability to back up and deal with this first ship. Anyway, it's an issue that, or I guess an opportunity where we can create a lot of jobs and also get some training for the upcoming gas line work and other things, training up welders and so on and so forth.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would agree with you. There's a lot of benefit to the state and to the Alaska Marine Highway System. I think if ASD got the bid on this project, it definitely makes them, they would have to be a working, viable shipyard. One of the biggest problems they have is they don't have enough employment to keep really good employees on a year-round basis, and this would give them that. Washington State Ferries, to address their need, they start everything out. Everything is with state general fund dollars, and that's, you know, that's the problem that we had when we started this project. We're looking for money to build it. We're looking for, you know, feds to help us build it. So we got off on the, on, you know, trying to find the dollars to help us build the boat. And it may have, you know, I didn't think it was a problem until I found out about the Ninth Circuit Court.
So maybe you could help the committee kind of sort through that to see what kind of flexibility we do have going forward to deal with the construction. We also have an interest in these type of facilities for the fabrication of offshore oil and gas work, or potentially other type of oil and gas work that, you know, is dealing with waterfront issues. So there's a lot of opportunity if we could, you know, get the industry up and running, not only in Anchorage and Fairbanks for manufacturing and helping us build a gas line, but, you know, in this case, some of our coastal communities have facilities that they could help too. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Project 3633, page 193. What are we stating here? We have, in prior appropriations, we were looking at deferred maintenance, and initially we were requesting $3.5 million in deferred maintenance, with a backlog of $90 million of deferred maintenance in airports. Throughout the state of Alaska, we have 256 rural certified airports, and we have been funding to some degree this category since the 1990s. And now we're not going to spend any more money on this category.
Mr. Chairman, could I add some clarification?
Sure.
The remaining items on this list are showing amendments, and this is where in the original capital bill, the deferred maintenance projects were in the governor's capital bill, but they have since then been separated out into the deferred maintenance bill.
So this $3.5 million is in the deferred maintenance?
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have any other questions on page 10. Okay. With that, we'll take care of the green sheets, I guess.
Okay, done.
We'll have a brief at ease.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, we didn't get to that in the interim, meaning the 2 hours between this morning and this afternoon. So I owe you that.
Hold on. I got to come back on the record. If you could please repeat your question,
sure.
Senator Thomas.
Going back to my question, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to my earlier question regarding the GO bond that was passed in 2008 and the projects that were listed in that. One large project is, in fact, the intersections on the Stees, the old and new Stees Highway, and seems like a long time to go forward. I don't want to be waiting. We're looking forward to maybe another bond proposal this year. I'd hate to be waiting for 2 years before anything even comes from it, you know, as we're trying to hurry things up. So I was just wondering if those bonds have been sold and those project is ready to be bid, or what's the status of it?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, we did develop a project schedule for the projects that DOT had to administer, and we looked at the timelines that we had for development of those projects. The intersections that you're talking about with the new commercial area out there on the Stees is in the development stages. I will get back to you specifically on when that project will be going out to bid. I do not know, you know, which bonds they were tied to, but I think we're nearing to the second bond sales for those projects.
You know, I hear about it, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I hear about it every time I get back to Fairbanks from contractors. Where is the bond money, or where is this, or where is that? And, you know, and I've checked on some other projects, and it just seems like it's a long time in coming for some. I realize when there's funny federal money involved, these projects take a long time. It's very hard to difficult to explain to people that things are 7 or 10 years away from the time that they're discussed, and it's a little discouraging. And so I'll leave that one at that. But I had one other that I might ask you about on page 116.
Senator Thomas, if I may, in regards to what we just went through with the stimulus projects, we had a very, very tight timeline given to us by the federal government to receive those funds and obligate those funds. That took a tremendous amount of staff effort to work towards that success. And we did achieve that. We didn't send any money back for the stimulus dollars that were granted to us. We were able to accept all of them. Unfortunately, the staff that we had that may have been working on the GO bond projects, we pulled in to be able to capture that fund. We are going to be letting contracts in 2010 totaling almost $818 million for infrastructure development work. This is a banner year for us for federal projects, general fund projects, GO bond projects that we will be putting out on the street. So we've heard the issues raised by the contractors. We're working diligently to efficiently use those funds that are given to us by the legislature and the people of Alaska. And we are now at the cusp of being able to get those jobs out onto the streets. So we'll have a banner year in 2010 and 2011.
I appreciate that. And I guess we'll look forward to that. And the other question, last one that I had, was on page 116, there is the Wander Around Town Trail, which was referenced by someone else, 10-foot-wide paved path that will provide safe access. The other day I called about a one-mile bike path in Fairbanks and was told that the price would be $3 million. In excess of $500,000 to plan a bike path on a existing one-mile straight road on good gravel in a residential area with only about 4 street crossings, and I couldn't believe it. I called a contractor and asked him, and he was flabbergasted as well, that with the general design of bike paths, that someone would say that it was going to cost over $500,000 just to design the bike path. And it's pretty frustrating to get those kind of numbers. It makes you almost embarrassed to suggest such things be built and have the general public wonder, because if you're suggesting it, it almost reflects upon you, the person suggesting it, spending that kind of money on a one-mile bike path, $2.6 and $2.8 million, depending on whether it was attached to the road or not. Straight road, right off of another main rural road. You know, it's just, couldn't believe it. Regular, rather flat ground. It was just amazing. So anyhow.
Mr. Richards, maybe you could get back to the committee on that and just maybe give us an idea of what are some of the more normal, or the normal range of bike paths per mile, or kind of what your department's running into dealing with bike paths. I know there's different issues in different parts of the state, so
I'll be glad to, Mr. Chairman. I share the concern and the frustration that I hear in your voice, Senator Thomas.
Amazing.
The only reason I mentioned this one's 10 miles and it's $450,000. We want these planners and designers to come design our 1 mile. We figure we'd get it done for about $45,000 in that case.
I think it's 10 feet wide.
No, it's 10 foot wide, that's right.
Not 10 miles long.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. I didn't mean to get too worked up on the Little Marine Highway issue, but.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All about jobs. Jobs and roads. So let's go ahead and try to start DNR. We only got, maybe we'll do about 10 minutes worth. We'll see how far we get.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Lita Simons. I'm the Support Services Director for the Department of Natural Resources. And Mr. Chairman, shall we start with the deferred maintenance funding?
Wait, if you could just take a brief at least. Drop the deferred. We could walk through the deferred maintenance. I guess there's
four projects.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have one appropriation request in the deferred maintenance budget for $4 million. This is made up of two allocations, one for state parks and one for the Division of Agriculture Plant Materials Center deferred maintenance, and in total we have 21 projects. 20 of them are in state parks, and I can read down the list of projects, Mr. Chairman. Sure. First project on the project list is Chugach Area State Park and Recreation Facility Repair and Renovation. We'll be repairing parking barrier posts and cables, Potter Section House and Eklutna toilets, and area kiosks. Repairs to roads, trails, fire pits, signs, and picnic tables. Project number two in the Kenai Area State Park and Recreation Facility Repair and Renovation. Repair Kenai River patrol boats and trailers, Captain Cook toilets, and area campground roads, signs, picnic tables, windows, decks, and public use cabin stove. Project number three, Kodiak Area State Park and Recreation Facility Repair and Renovation. Repair Buskin River Fishing Platform and area signs and picnic tables and fire pits. Number four, Matsu Area State Park and Recreation Facility Repair and Renovation. Repair Finger Lake Furnace, Independence Mine, Volunteer Housing, Lake Louise and Nancy Lake Toilets and area signs, roads, trails, picnic tables, water well, public use cabin windows and doors. Number five, similar types of repairs in Northern Area State Park and Recreation Facilities. Repair Chena River toilets and area signs, campground roads, trails, picnic tables, and water wells. Number six, in Southeast Area State Park and Recreation Facility, repair Halibut Point toilets and area observation decks, picnic shelter roofs, handrails, stairways, signs, campground roads, trails, picnic tables, and bulletin boards. Number seven, in Wood Chick-Chick Area State Park, we have plans to rebuild an airplane engine, repair signs, and a boat launch. Number eight, in Chena River State Recreation Area, renovate uneven campsites and eroded roads, failing wells, level and recap trailhead parking areas and eroding trails. Number nine, Delta Area Parks, Visitors Contact Station and Volunteer Support Center, renovation in the shower, laundry, and office space areas. Number 10, in Chugach State Park, in the Middle Fork, Flat Top, and Hillside Trails, we are going to renovate those trails that have become unsafe due to erosion, mud, and steep locations. Number 11, Chugach State Park, Canyon Road Trailhead Access, renovate the eroded trailhead parking and access road. Number 12, Nancy Lake State Recreation Area. 13 public use cabins, repair of 10 failing wood stoves and chimney systems, renovate 6 failing outhouses, repair roof steps, and other needs. Number 13, Independence Mine State Historical Park, historic building stabilization with painting and utilities upgrade. Number 14, Slycott Creek Parking Bridge and Stairs. This is in the Kenai River Management Area. Renovate the rough parking area, failing bridge, and stairs for fishing access. Number 15, Ketchumak Bay State Park, trails, bridges, and docks. Renovate eroded trails, failing bridges, and sinking dock. Number 16, Nanilchik Beach State Recreation Area. Renovate eroded campsites, roads, and parking areas. Number 17, Refuge Cove State Recreation Site. Renovate eroded parking and trail areas. Number 18, Salmon House Renovation in Old Sitka State Historic Site. Repair rotted walls, chimney, windows, and water pump and other problems. Number 19, Chilkat State Park Rehabilitation. Renovate uneven campsites, eroded roads, failing wells, rotted picnic tables, and other problems. And the last project for parks, number 20, Greening Cabin and Wickersham House Renovation. Repair damaged walls, floors, and add insulation.
If you could bring back to the committee some information on the Wickersham House.
I will do that, Mr. Chairman.
And the status of that, Senator Egan.
Yes, Mr. Chair, can you separate those projects, the Greening Cabin and Wickersham?
Okay. And then also there's been I heard there was an energy report on the People's House or the Governor's Mansion or the Governor's House. All three are the same building. And it needs some extensive work. I heard that there's an energy report out with a list of items that could be addressed, and I'd like you to get the committee a copy of that or spin us up on the cost of dealing with the People's House in Juneau. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would Chick number 7, rebuild engine, airplane engine? Why is that under this park program? I don't see any other equipment repairs under any of these categories.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we do also have some equipment repairs in number 2, Kenai Area State Park, for patrol boats and trailers. And these are major upgrades. And we understood it would be appropriate to include these in the deferred maintenance.
And what are the other options for repairing equipment other than covering them under the State Parks Deferred Maintenance Program?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we could include them also. The other option would be to have them in the regular CIP budget.
Yes, I see it, find it hard to believe that this is going to enhance the use of the state park by anyone other than who's going to be using this plane. Is for flying people that want to fly around the park?
Him.
In the Wood-Tichick area, or?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I do have James King on the line, I believe, that can perhaps help answer that question if you would like a little more information on that.
Mr. King, could you help us with that question from Senator Hoffman, please, after you identify yourself and who you represent?
Yes, for the record, my name is James King. I'm the State Parks Director. Senator Hoffman, through the chair, we have one plane in the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, and that is in Dillingham. For Wood-Tichick State Park, as you know, it's a very remote park. That plane is used for patrols to go out and check on hunters, to do search and rescue efforts out there within the park, to go out and check on facilities, cabins, volunteers that are out doing work in the park. So it's our main transportation in and out of the park.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, well, you should get back a written response to that on that airplane. Senator Olson.
Mr. King, as I see that, you know, having been worked out at Dillingham and familiar with the Wood-Tichick area there, I guess I don't understand, what are you doing with these patrols and these hunters that are out there? Are you checking to see if their hunting license are in order? And The other thing is search and rescue. Isn't that something more under the purview of public safety?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Olson. You bring up a good point. The search and rescue, there are other agencies that do that, but that plane is actually based in Aleknagik there, and our staff is in Aleknagik, and often they are the first responders. They're the closest ones that can get out there quickly, and so it's used for those efforts. As far as checking on hunters, yes, you are right. It's a compliance. There are lots of out-of-state hunters and guided hunters, as well as locals out there, and the rangers go out and check licenses, check to make sure that they're following the regulations, which there are a lot for that particular area.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, and then we're going to finish up today.
So, Mr. King, you're saying you're doing enforcement work out there as well? And citing these hunters for violations?
Our first response is always education, but yes, we have a enforcement officer, a ranger in that's assigned to Wood-Tik-Tik State Park, and if people are violating the game laws, we do give them a citation.
Just remind me what kind of airplane that is.
It's a Super Cub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, what? Just one other quick item. I think on the People's House, better known as the Governor's Mansion, it may fall under Department of Administration or DOT, but I see the OMB director in the background there, so she'll help us get that information to the committee so we can take a look at that facility, because that is a building that the state needs to maintain, and in my opinion, first-class shape. We refer to it as a mansion, but it's far from a mansion. So we'll see you back at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning to go continue on through DNR.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, everybody, for coming this afternoon. Meeting adjourned.